We're here.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. It is, what day is it? Monday.
Monday
night.
I think.
Generational change. I'm Jen.
I'm Peter.
Nobody's
got nobody here. Guys, come in. Come on.
Oh, that's so funny. We're literally talking
about
ourselves.
Have no love. Nobody gives a damn about us. We better hope that every candidate that comes in tonight is going to share.
I wonder. Well, are you telling them to do that, to put it out on the
table? Yeah,
okay.
Of course,
like, so they know to do that.
I would hope
that they're
so.
Going.
And our buddies stuck in the middle, Osiris, unfortunately, has left us already. He says this is going to be great, and I would agree with him. It is going to
be great.
Maybe
they don't think it starts until 9.
So
I don't
for
know.
The people, well, yes, it does start at 9, but you know.
Well, that's why. So they don't necessarily know that this is happening.
That's very.
But that was pretty sad. Okay, hi guys.
Hey, no one here.
No.
Hey, you know, there used to be this advertisement years ago. This guy Jason's Furniture. He would go, hey. Where'd everybody go? They're not here.
Yeah, we really got on, and there's not a lot of love.
No, there wasn't
like,
a lot of love.
I was
going live before either.
No, I think that, but that's what I'm saying. I think I want to see like who's doing what tonight or whatever. Like that's part of it. I don't know what people are doing, but yeah, there's probably people that are live.
Yeah.
Case study QB is live.
Like it's like a Monday night type thing. Actually, you know what? I think Marianne Williamson and Katie Halper may be doing a podcast.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do it right when we do ours.
Well, you know, I mean,
yeah,
but
nobody,
we're special. We are. We're good people. Don't you guys like our show? So for the four people that are here that I've hit the, hey, Mal, wasn't that a fantastic event with Nina Turner the other day?
Guys,
that's what I'm talking about.
Guys, our Broward event, seriously, I think it was really a one-of-a-kind Nina speech. Like, it was really,
it definitely
stood
out.
It was above and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, all her speeches are great,
yeah,
but this one was on another level.
First of all, she went way longer than ever. Like, it was like a catharsis for her, I think.
Yeah, well, you and her really have a special connection.
Well, you know, she got very teary about that abuse that she took when she was ranning in August. Ranning?
Ranning? Jen, making up words. Jen, how much have you had
today? She ran in August.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That is awesome, Mal. Great to hear. Obviously, there were a number of people, my understanding. I think we raised her about a little over $1,000.
Well, ultimately. And what, I mean, and then, you know, it was very nice of Jen Core to sponsor. Just saying.
We did. We put our money to good use because for Nina, it is good use. And as I was saying on my rant, if you will, about an hour ago, it is unfortunate that there is so much of this nihilism on the left that wanted to rain on our parade for having Nina here and fundraising for her. Guys.
Who was doing that, though? I mean, this is what I don't see on the regular, right? Like,
well,
what were they
true.
Doing?
Basically complaining about our affiliation with Miami Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
And just, guys, you got to get a act.
I feel, actually, and what's interesting is that I haven't always been a huge fan of Miami Jeff, you know, like we've sort of coexisted in the same lane and pretty like civilly, but I wasn't necessarily, and I feel like this past weekend, I sort of had like, I don't know, it felt like a coming together and like a reckoning. And I just feel like we are now feeling somewhat inspired to create, I don't know, do we call it a council or coalition?
I would call
council.
It like a council. Okay. So what we're planning, A1, Aaron!
A1 in the house.
Good to see you, my friend. Please hit the like button if you can. Sorry for asking for you to do something immediately, but that's always
what do it.
Do it.
So I really had this thought.
Miss you, my man. Hope you're doing well.
When we were at the date, I was at the date event. Peter was out of town. And I remember sitting there and thinking there's got to be a way to sort of bring this all together. And so what we want to do, and we spoke about it with the head of the Progressive Caucus in Miami, Jose, really nice kid. I mean, well, I say kid, he is an adult. And we want to have a council that basically is a coalition of the Tri-County Progressive Caucuses and have it be the South Florida Progressive Caucus Council.
I think that is definitely what we need to do.
Yeah.
And again, it isn't to take away from what anybody else is doing individually. I think we just have to recognize that it really is a big deal when we have the opportunity to bring a lot of people together. Now, of course, it's a new deal. It is a new deal in regards to something that was brought to our attention. Jen if you want to briefly just talk about the gentleman, Jose, who's now in charge of Miami Progressives.
Yeah, nice kid. And he is definitely motivated. He was definitely open to the idea of coalescing with Broward. And, you know, we're not getting everybody quite on board with this idea. And I think that what we could do, I mean, people don't like the idea of merging them. And I, because maybe that has to do with maintaining position or whatever. So that's why what I propose is we create a council, and each of the caucuses have somebody that on a monthly basis meets with the council so that we could kind of all support each other in what we're doing. So I don't know, that might be a monthly thing. I just think it's a really smart idea. So everybody can keep their little president titles or whatever it is. And so that, I think that's the best way to do it. And it's not really a merger, but we're going to create a council. And I really think that monthly, like, I would like to know what's going on in Palm Beach. Maybe we can support.
And it would also put a lot less pressure on the overall group having to do too much. You know, if you didn't have to worry about hosting a progressive meeting, let's say every 30 days, and you only have to do it once a quarter, I would think that that would be of great appeal for a lot of people. It'd be less work, less stress. And let's face it, nowadays, you know, everybody's doing a Zoom meeting. So you have a location where people would show up and they would do it. Easy enough. And you don't necessarily have to have the same location every time.
Right.
You know, here in Broward, we really like to go into the Grind Coffee Project, but that place has been unfortunately shut down. So
there's,
you know,
we'll find another place, but right. It'll rotate. The council will rotate meetings. And the idea is so that we could kind of, like what Mallory's saying, the left hand needs to know what the right hand is doing. And I think that it's not about controlling it. Everybody's still going to have their own things in their own area, but this way we can support and we can also build a coalition when we need to. I think that makes us infinitely stronger within having to deal with the Democratic Party, because the reality is, people, okay, the statewide progressive caucus, which is what this is supposed to be, doesn't do that. It doesn't do anything. And I think that in South Florida in particular, we really need to coalesce.
Good evening, Arlene. Yes, our candidates panel will start in just a couple of minutes. And again, I think that that's also what doing these panels are about, because we really need to form this coalition. And it's been really unfortunate just watching this whole, you want to call it political puritanism that we're having to deal with on the regular, this idea that we can't deal with this person because that person says this, that, or the other thing. I'm concerned about whether or not we have non-corporate representation on the primary issues that we're fighting for. You're not going to agree with everybody on everything. It's simply not going to happen.
No.
And that's, you know, again, I have heard a lot of people give speeches in politics, but there is something special about Nina Turner when she gives a speech. And what she represents to so many people in terms of the hopes and dreams of what our country could be. And the idea that people are trying to knock her down that are supposed to be on her side.
Is she feeling it right now? Or are we talking about from in the past?
I'm just talking about from what happened. Well, not just what happened in the past, but even what happened yesterday. There's this idea that, you know, Nina's not good enough. And if she's not good enough, then who is?
Then truthfully, then just forget having a government. Because I honestly, there is nobody inside electoral politics. We recognize the need for an outside system. We need to have outside influencers that are working with people inside the system. That's how it has to work. But within the system, you will not find somebody that would be better suited to represent people than Nina Turner.
And I say all the time, you know, Nina really, she could have been on Easy Street for the longest time. She could have had a career where she didn't even have to think. She would have just, you know, she could just give speeches and that would have been that. But she decided that her principles were more important and she sacrificed a lot. You know, the Democratic establishment really saw her as somebody that they can kind of, you know, ride the coattails of. But Nina made a decision that she was going to be for the people. And she really is. Yeah, okay. She defends the squad. That's a reason not to support her? My God.
Like it's ridiculous.
We are at that point where we really have to, you know, ask ourselves, you know, where does the line get drawn? Because we as the left really need to figure out exactly what this next evolution in this movement is going to be. That's what we're trying to figure out right now. We're trying to figure out How do we have sustainable relationships and coalitions that grow and grow so that way we become a real force?
That's what we're figuring out on the macro level. On the micro level, we're figuring out how do we participate in that process. Like in the meantime, we're figuring out.
You can keep your title. You can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. And that's fine. I'm El Presidente. El Presidente. They're coming for me.
You're the president.
So we're just waiting for the rest of our wonderful guests to arrive.
I think we should invite Lorenzo in because I think the early bird gets the worm.
Fine. Fair enough. He is running in District
70,
which is north Texas.
Yeah, but I think it still might be considered part of the Metroplex. We'll find out. It's north of Plano, but we'll see.
Well, I like Plano.
My son is a Texan. I spent 6 years living there. I have a very strong affinity for it. I didn't want to leave, and I was very happy in San. I was in San Antonio, but.
Welcome, our first guest of the evening, Lorenzo Sanchez. Welcome to Generational Change.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So was I correct in where your district is?
Yes, it is in the Metroplex. Okay. It's on the northern side of Dallas. So it includes Dallas and Collin County, pieces of Plano, Allen, and Richardson, all within Collin County.
Right. People have no idea how, when people do not understand the size of what we're talking about here, like, I mean, both you and Chris are seeking seats in the Metroplex, and there's so many others. Like, it's massive. It's massive.
Yeah, there's new people moving in every day, and the growth is explosive. I was raised in this community, so to see how much it can grow has really even shocked me. We're seeing some mid-rises springing up here with Toyota Motor Company and people like Liberty Mutual relocating here. And we've seen a lot of transplants from different states and a lot of young people who graduate college throughout our country and decide that Texas is going to be the place where they settle down and start some roots.
Yeah, I highly recommend it to people, actually. There's a lot of space there, people. A lot of space. We are going to be underwater. They have space. And for the most part, the people are very friendly there. I was always, and I have a lot of friends there from Los Angeles.
I like Texas a lot. As a matter of fact, my favorite place is the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And even though it tends to be definitely more on the conservative side, you know, people were extremely inviting. And I don't remember the name of the place, and I do not eat chicken anymore, but I got to tell you.
It always there comes is, to food or sports.
Of course it does.
Food or sports.
Of course. And so there was this, I guess, like this barbecue joint that's right by Dealey Plaza. Of course, I was sightseeing and had to pick a place to eat. And I had this pizza, this roasted chicken pesto pizza. It was like the greatest
you're
thing
saying
I've
this is
ever
he's going to know where in the world you're talking about. Do you
Maybe
have any
he will.
Idea? That's like asking him if he knows your friend Dave.
Yeah, my friend Dave, you know, who ate the pizza place.
We're really, really fortunate here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex to have numerous dine-out opportunities. So it is really hard for me to pinpoint that pizza. And also because I know we have a few within my district, I don't want to insult anybody by saying, hey, it has to be this one.
Okay, so but, very
that, is a very that is a very politically correct answer.
So clearly you're understanding politics. Is this your first time running?
This is my second time. That's why I understand the politics.
He understands the nuances of the game.
I was going to say, understand how this works.
Well, we are going to invite our next wonderful guest.
It's Representative Jasmine.
You know her as a great leader in the Democratic State House. She is now running to represent the Texas 30th Congressional District. Jasmine Crockett, welcome back to Generational Change.
Hi, y'all.
Do you guys know each other by any chance from the...
No, not at all. I've never met him a day in my life.
Never.
There's like 30 million people or something. No, I know them.
Okay. I knew you were being sarcastic because they're still campaigning. They're on the circuit in the Dallas area. Jasmine, do you overlap? No.
No, we're really not that close. He's in a northern county. It's not that far. I mean, maybe about 20 minutes or so to get to where he is. But we really know each other because we were in very similar races in two different places. And so we both went to runoffs. We both were actually, Lorenzo, I think you were winning.
I was losing my runoff. by like.
No, okay, so we both were losing. I know we were in like the same boat. So we were both like losing, like when the earlies came out, and it was like, oh, this isn't good, because we've been voting for 3 weeks because we actually extended early voting an extra week. And I was like, well, you know, we tried. That was my attitude. I was down way more than Lorenzo. I was down by 700 votes. And then we both came back and won. The difference was my race was over. I didn't have a Republican to go against. And Lorenzo had to go against one of the most powerful Republicans in the Texas House, where one donor had given him $1 million. One, because we don't believe in any caps whatsoever in Texas. So
right. Well, you know, Florida, and what's so pathetic about us is that Florida envies Texas. Like Florida wants to be Texas. Like our legislature drools over Texas. You guys come up with an abortion ban, our legislature's like, yeah,
I know. It's sad.
So really. What are the new district lines looking like? I mean, is that something we wanted to definitely talk on, was the gerrymandering? I mean, we all have this problem.
Yeah, unfortunately, the only state that seems to really have any clue as to what to do is Michigan, and they've got a group called Ungerrymandered, which is independent district lines being drawn. And, you know, we wish that more states would take that on. But of course, when the legislatures are controlled, especially in a state like Texas, which, you know, is creeping more and more purple by the day, you know, the GOP is going to continue. You know, this is all, and this is just a thing about corporate politics in general, is rather than evolve and go where the people are going, it's no, let's suppress them even harder because that'll allow us to keep our power just a little bit longer. So how are things looking as far as what potentially the new district lines are going to look like? Anything favorable, or is it still really, you know, as bad as it's been over the past couple of decades?
No, so it's awful. I mean, if you know, I kept telling people it was a 1-2 punch. And I'm sure I said it to you guys before as we were. I mean, you guys have been on this journey with me. You've been.
No, it's great. I love it.
Yeah.
I feel like we're going to be in your biopic. Like when you have your like big biopic in a few years, we're going to be like, yeah, I know.
Yes, I'm feeling absolutely. It. Interestingly enough, there's one thing that, you know, Texas always has like one redeeming fact, right? So like one of the redeeming facts that we have is our U.S. or our Texas Constitution. When it comes to the Texas House, they have to draw the lines to be wholly contained within the actual county. That county line rule helped us out a lot. And so they weren't able to really play around with the lines as much as they wanted to, because even in our urban centers, like our suburban surrounding areas, they are growing as well. They are getting more diverse. We have a housing issue at the core of like our urban centers. And so people are having to move to the suburbs. And so the seat that Lorenzo is running for, you know, they decided to, you know, sacrifice a few seats. I mean, they're still not fair lines, right? But like they sacrificed one up there in Collin County. They sacrificed one in Tarrant County, which is where the Cowboys play. The Cowboys don't play in Dallas, FYI.
They do not play
in Dallas. They just call themselves the Dallas Cowboys, but I digress. And so, so we saw like these sacrificial like seats. Now they went and they took seats that they didn't have any business taking to try to even it out. So the numbers will be about the same. They still will not have a super majority on the House side. But as far as the Senate is concerned, and as far as Congress is concerned, we got screwed. I don't really know how else to put it.
And so Lorenzo, how is it going to affect you, do you think? Like from your last race to this race?
Well, I think what scares me is that people feel that there's some sort of complacency factor with this House seat, because I would have won it by a few hundred votes in its current geographical map area. But, you know, a few hundred votes between 2020 and 2022 could be much different. So we're really focused on registering voters. They took the last district I ran in and chopped it up into 5 new districts. That's how afraid they are of seeing a young progressive talking about issues that used to not be even spoken about by Democrats or Republicans. I think they felt the need to continue to sweep them under the rug, but this kind of bold messaging really is resonating throughout our entire country. We saw it by being able to win a highly contested runoff against very and primary last cycle against very qualified individuals, but it was a real thirst to try to get some sort of different, right? Something I've been talking to voters and sometimes they can't even explain to me what's wrong with our current political system that they want us to go change. They just are not happy with the direction it's been heading. They've been seeing things like, you know, our last president and the insurrection and now the challenges against reproductive rights and voting rights here in Texas in particular. And they're just disgusted by the entire system. So I've been talking to voters left, right, wherever they are on the political spectrum and letting them know that I could be a representative to build those bridges and unite people with some bold progressive ideas that are actually going to get our state moving forward.
I think that's a great point. And, you know, we obviously have seen a lot of the problems that have been going on in the state as of late. Needless to say, you know, the energy grid is, and before I continue,
let's bring Dawn on because she's here better late than never. Lovely as always. No,
it may have been like a link issue, but
all right,
she is running in Texas's new 37th congressional district in Austin. And this is obviously one of the areas that is having a huge problem right now. Donna Imam, welcome back to Generational Change.
She was probably boiling water. Well, she was off boiling her water.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that was one of the things we were just noticing in the news, like the recent news for you guys seemed to be very environmentally based. I see that you're having, again, with the power grid is still not really up to where it needs to be to overcome the nightmare that you guys had in 21. And then this whole boil water thing, which I'm sure Donna could probably write a dissertation about why we're having the boil water thing and what it's about. But you guys have some serious environmental concerns, let's just say.
Yeah, can you all hear me?
Yeah, it's just the voice and the video are off, but I can hear you.
Okay, good, good. Well, first of all, hey, thanks for having me on your show, Jen and Peter. Always love watching you guys talk about all the latest stuff that's going on. Really appreciate it. And really great to see Lorenzo and Representative Crockett. Really awesome to see you guys here from Texas. So really appreciate you guys having on. Yes, we still are under a boil water notice here in Austin, which is kind of strange in the sense that, you know, in the 15 plus years that I've been living here in Austin, Texas, this hasn't happened a lot, but it seems to be happening more and more. So it's kind of unfortunate. We did have a lot of it, obviously, during the winter freeze, but I think that was something that a lot of people across Texas experienced, not just Austin. But yeah, this is a strange phenomena. Apparently it has nothing to do with the weather or the cold weather that we had last week. And it's something internal to the wastewater system here in Austin, Texas. So,
I mean, what is causing this? Like somewhere when this happens, there's somewhere along the line, somebody's being negligent. Something's not happening. The infrastructure isn't being maintained. The whatever, whatever. Like it's not just random, right? Like it doesn't just happen. So like where are they falling short there?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you asked that. All the stories that have been posted about it, that's exactly the question everybody's asking Austin Water. Like, what exactly happened? Tell us. They're saying it's an internal challenge or issue that they've come across, and they need to get all these certifications before they can start telling people to drink it again. So that's the story right now. And so we're hoping maybe by tomorrow or the next day, we won't have to boil water anymore.
Yeah, but isn't this, wait, and this is occurring simultaneously with random power outages, correct?
Well, the random power outages, you know, they could be due to things like when you have ice here in Texas. So when you have trees that accumulate a lot of ice, they get heavy and they will fall on electric lines. And that is one of the reasons that we did have power outages. Now, there may be other reasons for power outages, but I know that was one of the reasons that we had several power outages, not just in this area, but I think across all of Texas that experienced the ice storm. I don't know if you guys experienced that up north in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
So, Lorenzo, when you get to the State House, start talking about burying your power lines. We find that if the power lines are buried, then trees cannot be the cause of your problems. Just a suggestion.
It's so frustrating, right? Having individuals that want to go and solve some of these issues and then seeing our legislative body continue to kick the can down the road. This was happening in 2011 when we were hosting the Super Bowl. This was something that we talked about in our campaign. It was listed on our website about winterizing our grid in 2019 before this freeze ever happened. And that's what's at stake in every election that we have throughout our state and throughout our country. People that want to either go and solve some of these issues and really, you know, get to work to make sure that our state can continue to provide for its citizens and, you know, thrive economically speaking. But fixing the issues, right? And we want to solve them in ways that aren't going to destroy our planet, in ways that will provide high-paying jobs to individuals, and in ways that hopefully future generations will be proud of as well, that we started the process of making sure that we make Texas the greenest state in our country, and also provide, you know, those business opportunities. I think it's embarrassing. Businesses don't want to come to Texas when they can't even rely that the electricity is going to stay on.
I think that's an excellent point. And Jasmine, if you want to hop in, you know, as far as I can tell right now, this is one of the central issues that I can see in terms of the red versus blue dynamic in the state. You know, we know what has happened with the grid shutting down. It was a massive problem last winter. It is a massive problem right now. We need to move to alternative energy sources. And Texas in a number of places has been really good, especially when it comes to wind power. But it's still more or less the biggest producer of fossil fuels. And that is something that is a major problem, particularly when it comes to the red-blue dynamic, because it seems in Texas, especially for you guys who are either millennial or Gen Z, most of you seem to be on the pretty progressive side, even for Texas. And I think that that speaks a lot to the direction that our generations really want to move the needle in. So what do you think are some of the reasonable solutions that we could be looking at as a means to dealing with this problem? Because it is serious. And the fact that it hasn't been fixed after what happened a year ago really says a lot about where the Texas GOP is right now.
No, I mean, they want to gamble with lives. I mean, that's what we've seen with COVID-19. That's what we've seen with the grid. That's what we've seen as we've fought in public schools about whether or not kids are allowed to wear masks or not. I mean, they're just gambling with lives every day so that they can have the next talking point, which is really sad. And I want to say that, like, it's a terrible phraseology, but it really fits. That storm was literally the perfect storm. Everything that could go wrong went wrong at one time, right? And so we had generation issues, and those generation issues, they were compounded for a multitude of reasons. Number one, we, as you talk about burying lines, as we talk about, and let me just throw Luke out there, who is running for railroad commissioner. Let me just do that plug, because we like to be mysterious about what the railroad commissioner in the state of Texas does. But this is the body that actually regulates and enforces a lot of the laws and regulations on oil and gas, right? But we call it railroad so that nobody knows what the heck it is. And they think that it's somebody that's going to do something with trains, right? And so what we found is that a lot of our gas lines are not buried deeply enough anyway. We've had our fair share of explosions that have killed people. That wasn't enough to tell them to bury the lines deeper. And so with them not being buried deep enough, what we saw was we had lines that literally froze over. So we had a freezing problem, right? On top of the fact, some of the things that were just brought up was the transmission problem. So you've got the generation problem where they're having a problem even generating the energy. And then we've got to deal with the fact that transmission is a problem because we've got down lines, right? Because we've got lines everywhere. So we've got trees that are falling, and all that kind of stuff. So, and then we even had people running into stuff. I have reports about that because Texans aren't necessarily the best at driving on the roads in the ice. But also you had this incredible demand. And so we always function really on the brink. And I think that's why people are like, wait a minute, what's going on with the grid? Are we going to fail again? Because we never have like this huge like difference in like what we have in supply versus what we have in demand. We always literally gamble and teeter. And it's like this little difference. And so what happened is like the gamble did not pay out. I mean, it paid out for those could invest because we are deregulated, like it allowed like the prices to shoot up just to get something because we couldn't meet the demand. So here it was, the other part of the storm that was really big and problematic was that the entire state froze. Like usually maybe the northern part of the state, right? Like the part that's closest to Oklahoma or Arkansas, that part may freeze, but the entire state. And on top of that, where we go for our backup because we're not on the national grid is we go to Mexico. Well, guess what? Mexico was frozen too. So Mexico was like, we're going to hold on to our own energy, right? Like we can't give y'all any because we then won't be warm either. So literally everything that could go wrong went wrong. So, you know, I hate that people literally have PTSD and they have it for good reason because the bill, the main bill that we passed, which we passed, whatever, but the main bill about weatherization, because that was yet another problem, right, was the fact that there was no requisite that you weatherize. It was like, oh, if you think this is a good idea, then do it, right? So they didn't weatherize their generation. And they're like, but it's Texas. They're gambling again that we won't get that cold. So we don't need to weatherize. And so now it's like a fine of maybe like $5,000 a day or something. If you fail to weatherize, which is not really an incentive when you can make well over $1 billion in one quarter, if you just have the right kind of gamble. Right. So that's why people are concerned about the grid. But this last storm, we didn't seemingly have any grid issues. And you like anything else, we're talking about infrastructure on the national level. Well, Texas needs to talk a little bit more about the infrastructure of Texas. Everyone knows that Texas is the fastest growing state in this country, or one of the fastest. I think it's the fastest. And so we added 2 new congressional seats. That is because we are adding people. As we're adding people, we are not adding to the infrastructure of our grid, right? And we want to be by ourselves. You know, that's what Texas is. We always want to secede from something.
Been trying to do that since 1845. So no
surprise exactly there. That's who we are. So we continue to grow and have bigger demand. I actually proposed a bill because you can't build that like overnight, right? Like that's not going to happen. And winter was coming, as you would say, for those of you that love that wonderful show that's gone now. But anyway, winter was coming. So I was like, what are we going to do? And so I proposed a bill that actually was a tax incentive for people to get solar panels on their homes. That immediately adds to, well, that lessens the demand, but at the same time, we're also, you know, being a little bit more green. And also whatever you don't use, it actually then adds to the grid. And so they're basically microgrids, right? And so I wanted to incentivize people to do that. And so I offered a tax incentive because our property taxes are sky high in the state of Texas. And yeah, the chairman didn't want to give me a hearing. He wasn't trying to hear it. So.
What a surprise. But I do think, but I do think that the, like you said, the one thing that Texas has over Florida is that there really is this big coalition of up-and-coming progressives, not just Democrats, but progressives that really understand the importance of the massive changes that are coming. And Texas is a great reflection of that. You guys are a great reflection of that. Donna, we'll start with you. Obviously, your race is the new congressional district number 37. God, that's so many We've got 27.
Well, now it'll be 28.
28, right. Yeah, yeah.
We're
yeah.
getting
so far. We'll get one get more. 28, yeah. But Texas, obviously, with district number 37 in the Austin area, and we know how these wonderful districts get drawn. So tell us a little bit about your district, how that race is shaping up right now, because obviously the primary is, I believe, exactly a month away from today. Is it March 7th, I believe? So yeah, you guys are really coming down to the wire now. Yeah. So please share your thoughts on, you know.
Wait a minute now. I got to correct you. I got to correct you. We start voting a week from today. And
Today
is going to be on March 1st. In Texas is watching. I don't want you showing up on the 7th. I need you there.
Actually, I am not a GOP operative, guys. I just want you to know that.
Now that'll come out. He was trying.
I'm totally trying to mess with them right now. But they're the people. We don't want them to win.
We're trying to do these in order of primaries. Like that's the whole point of doing these.
The truth of the matter is, with the way voting is done today, and the way that it has become more and more difficult to do at times, it always makes sense to vote early if you can.
Oh, yeah.
So
please
try to get that out of the way. So Donna, first up, share your thoughts on District 37 and how the race is looking right now.
Yeah, so before I tell you about District 37, let me tell you a couple of things about what's going on in Texas and why this race is so important for us. First thing is, I don't know if you guys heard this, but it was over national news that we had a lot of mail-in ballot rejection. And I bring that up because a lot of people have actually had a mail-in ballot and could have voted, starting earlier this week or late last week. People started getting their mail-in ballots actually at home. So in Texas, if you're 65 or older, you could get a mail-in ballot. But in 2021, the trifecta GOP legislator that, Rep. Crockett is part of, the GOP legislator, they passed what's called Senate Bill 1. And so when you applied in Texas, every single year, you have to send in a paper application in order to vote by mail. And this is only open to people 65 or over, or if you have a disability, or if you're going to be an absent during the entire time that voting is going on. So for people who are 65 plus, they were getting all these ballots rejected because now they have to put in an ID number, and it has to match the ID number that you use when you register to vote. So if you used your driver's license number, you have to use your driver's license number. And then if you use your social security number, you have to use that, and they have to match. And the challenge became that most people don't remember, even if you registered to vote a month ago, which number did I use? How do you remember? So that is why we had such huge ballot rejections, mail-in ballot application rejections, basically at the beginning. Some of that's been now corrected because basically the counties now have a little bit more access to the driver's license databases. They didn't know they would have to go out of their databases into the into driver's license database, et cetera. So we had that challenge going on. So just setting the pretext here of what's going on in Texas. Number two, we had redistricting, which you talked about. Texas is the only state, I believe, that got two new congressional districts, right? And everybody's kind of thought was, hey, we have a GOP trifecta here. So if we get two new congressional districts, they're going to be gerrymandered to go red. But interestingly enough, we got two new districts, and one of them has been gerrymandered, but to go blue. And that is Texas's 37th district. So it's heavily leaning blue district, which means the primary election will decide the winner of this district. Now, the interesting thing about primaries is that Austin, Texas, for the longest time, for decades, has been sliced into six pieces like a pizza. And five of those pieces are represented by extreme right-wing GOP candidates, right? So in many midterms and many years for a long time, a lot of times we didn't even have a Democratic primary election. So even though people come out in the primary, a very small percentage, sometimes we've never had a Democrat running in a U.S. congressional race in a Democratic primary because these were so gerrymandered red. And the reason that this happened is that we got this district is because they wanted to shore up every single incumbent GOP and give them leads for an entire decade. So see how strategic the GOP is. They're making all of those five districts redder so that they keep control of every single district they can for an entire decade, ensuring that we don't have full representation. And so you guys might be wondering, what do you mean by full representation? Well, in the last decade, out of the 2020 census, 95% of the population of the growth of Texas happened because of Hispanic, Black, and Asian Americans. 95%, think about that, were due to these types of voters and these types of Texans. Yet, we don't necessarily have the ability to have that kind of representation that reflects that in Texas. So this race is obviously very exciting because it's an opportunity to, for Austin to vote to ensure that, we have representation for the city that Austin's become. And I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but Austin is now the 11th largest city in the entire country. It used to be a sleepy little college town, with University of Texas at Austin being the big, the big show here in this town. But now we are the 11th largest city, and some of the biggest challenges for Austin is the cost of living, As it was mentioned, you know, real estate taxes in Texas are not capped. So they keep going up with the valuation of housing. So every time they evaluate what the cost of your home is, if the price of the home goes up, your taxes go up. And so think about it this way: school teachers, social workers, folks that used to work on really modest incomes, maybe they made $40,000 to $60,000 their entire life. People who have worked their entire life that have bought a house, you know, a 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom small home with a 1-car garage. Maybe they bought it for $100,000, maybe $150,000. They paid it off. That home in Central Austin is now worth close to $1 million. $1 million. So the real estate taxes are close to 3%. And it's really, really impacting people on fixed income, retirees on fixed income, on Social Security, that are just unable to pay the basics. So these are some of the challenges that we have in Austin, Texas specifically. And Texas's 37th district is gerrymandered to go blue. So if we win on March 1st, whoever wins will start representing this district. And that's the way the general will go. And I think that's very similar to Texas 30, which is also very much blue leaning.
How many people are in that primary? How many people are in your primary, Donna?
There are 4 people on the ballot.
And the thing that's interesting, and this is why the gerrymandering problem in Texas is so bad, because, you know, Austin in particular is really, they always say Austin is the blue dot in the red state. And the fact that it's gerrymandered so badly that you've got literally one safe blue district and everything else is red, it doesn't make any sense. It's again, this is why we need fair districting. But I can imagine that, you know, the races in general are just so they're so hyper competitive right now. Obviously, there's the primaries that leads right into, you know, obviously, Jasmine, you're running in what is now an open seat. The retiring congresswoman is now stepping away. And of course, there is obviously a handful of people that are in your race. Why don't you tell us where things stand with your current
Jasmine was endorsed by the leaving congresswoman.
She was.
By the retiring congresswoman. Which
that helps a little bit.
It helps a lot. It helps a lot. Yeah. What's going on in that race?
So it's I have 8 opponents. I just want to be
my God.
I have 8 opponents.
Texas.
And you know, it's funny because I have an actual record, and I can't say the same for the vast majority of the people in my race. And the congresswoman's endorsement, while I am so very appreciative, you know, it immediately put me into this kind of front runner status. And I kind of like to just run my race. And when you're a front runner, everyone, all 8 of them, like to pull out their guns and shoot.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, this idea that I am not who I've been. I have been found to be freshman of the year by at least 3 different organizations, named one of the most effective legislators in this state by another organization. I was named to the Root Top 100 Most Influential African Americans in 21. I have done a lot. I filed more bills than anyone else this session. It's not really normal for freshmen to show up on national news anywhere and stay on national news. And I have a long track record as relates to my abilities in the courtroom, as well as the things that people just didn't see, which was me killing bills in committee that you never had to hear about, or most people don't stream the floor and see that I was fighting and making sure that we had a record for the redistricting litigation. Or do they know that I have a lawyer and I am involved in the redistricting litigation because I love Texas and I love my district that much? Instead, people, you know, there are certain people in this race that I believe absolutely have a heart for service. And then there are other people that really just want a title. And when you run in races where people are just seeking a title and they're not looking out for the people, then they sometimes will do less than ethical things. And so right now for me, I just want to kind of stay on message and talk about what matters to those in my district, because we are hurting in this country. And the last thing that we need is anybody who's not true to this and not real about it. And so I've shown myself to be that person. And, you know, when I ran the first time, I didn't have endorsements. Lorenzo will tell you. I mean, you know, I was not the endorsed gal. I mean, I had every big endorsement going against me. And this time, that's not the case. But usually when I talk to people, I talk to them about the fact that I have a record. I don't really talk very much about the endorsements. And I just started talking about endorsements more so now because I've earned every single endorsement over every single one of my opponents that I've sought out. They've not one person has beat me for any endorsement locally or nationally. And I say that because, you know, there's a political insider in my race. And, you know, sometimes political insiders feel entitled. They feel as if, hey, you know, I've been there. I know all the lobbyists and I know it. So, but that's not what we're here for. We're here for the people. We're not here for political games and insidership. Right. We're here for the people that have been in the streets and know what needs to be done for the people first. And so I'm excited to get over this. The polling also shows us to be leading, you know, the closest second to me. I'm leading by over 20 something points. The polling also suggests that we can get out of this without a runoff, which would be a blessing because I honestly want to be done on March 1st. I don't want to go to May 24th. And so we are absolutely pushing ahead, forging ahead, just trying to get to the 766,000 people in the district. And wow. Let's know. Yeah, it's big.
Everything is bigger in Texas, but my Lord, that is a lot. And I have to say, and Jasmine, to your credit, you know, the one thing that we pride ourselves on is we want to have non-corporate candidates on our podcast all the time. And it is interesting being a non-corporate candidate, seeing the perspective, even as the favorite, what they will do to try to take you down. Because like you said, there is so much power involved, but and again, it's cliche, I know, with great power comes great responsibility. Oh, and that is true for anybody who runs for office. And that really says a lot. And of course, if everything goes well for both of you ladies, it would obviously be a real treat to have you both on Capitol Hill. But Lorenzo.
Wait. Just before we get to Lorenzo, I just want to say that we did seek out to reach one of your opponents, Jasmine, several times and invited her to come on our show multiple times to give her the opportunity, and she ghosted us. Like, she didn't even give a. So I don't want people to think that this, I mean, we had a pre-existing relationship with Jasmine, has been on before, but we did invite one, the other progressive candidate.
We knew Jasmine before she was a big deal. Oh, that, yeah. That's all I want to say.
But no, I just want to put it out there. We did invite the progressive, quote unquote, in that lane, and they, she never wanted
it
to.
It is
come
what
on.
It is.
No, I we just got, want to say we didn't ghost her. No, that's all I'm saying.
We have a wonderful progressive who's here running for District 30. Yes. So that's what counts. And so, of course, we can't. And unfortunately, Chris Leal has, you know, he was doing a debate tonight. He would love to be here.
I was watching Chris's debate as I was trying to get that.
He may slide in the last 10 minutes.
We'll see what happens. We'll give him a makeup. Yeah. We'll give him a makeup.
But Lorenzo, it goes without saying, you know, one of the biggest problems that we do have in the progressive movement is that a lot of people like to, they're always focusing on the big shiny object at the top. Local politics is so vital for the issues that we're fighting for. And it was wonderful to see one of your supporters jump in and talk about your support for healthcare. I mean, obviously we support universal healthcare, Medicare for all. I think talking about local politics is extremely important. Please share with us the current state of your race and the importance of focusing on, you know, obviously what goes on in Austin and the value that you would bring serving there.
No, he's not in Austin. He's north of the Metroplex.
Austin is the capital of Texas.
Oh, I thought you were talking about his district in particular. I'm sorry. Okay. Yes, correct. I know.
Yeah. And you live there, so you would know. Just saying.
The state of our race is, so it's a newly drawn race. So there is no incumbent. There is five GOP Republicans running for that race. We're hoping that they get stuck in a runoff. There is three total Democrats, including myself. I'm the only candidate that's run for office previously to this race. And, you know, I'm the only candidate that was raised here. It's good that we talk about a lot of these corporate donors, but there's also this certain political establishment class that, you know, consulting, that does a lot of consulting for individuals, and that's how they make their bread and butter. So they're putting candidates in competitive races that don't even live in the district to try to, you know, go and mimic the needs of the district. I've been walking my neighborhood since 2016, since Trump was elected, trying to help people get elected in my community. And that's the kind of relationship I've built with my neighbors in our community. And that's why we think we're going to be successful. This last election cycle in 2020, as a Democratic nominee, we raised more money than any other Texas Democrat in the history of our state for Texas House. And that shows that you can do it. It was by doing it by small dollar donors, over 50,000 individual contributors giving to our campaign. And we were able to compete against a very well-funded establishment candidate. We didn't come out on top, but we showed that, you know, doing this grassroots types of donations can actually work. And right now we're, you know, the beneficiary of having more donors in district than all five and two of our Democratic opponents combined. We have more donors than all of them combined as well. And it shows the kind of movement we're building, $20, $5 at a time versus, you know, I think the person who's raised the most per person in my race on the Democratic side is about $1,800 a contributor. So if everyone can just think about how many friends you have that you can just reach out to and ask for $1,800.
I can actually tell you exactly how many friends I have that have given me at least $1,800. No, I have a few, but I can tell you exactly who they are. That's how
nobody would donate like that to me.
I need that to be my average right now. I'm just saying.
What is your average?
She said she needs that to be her average right now. I completely agree. If we were getting that kind of average donation from the hundreds of donors that have given us, we'd be set for all the way through the general. But that's not how we're running. But it shows this kind of idea, because I've tried to mentor some of the candidates that are running in the Texas House races here in Collin County so we don't lose any of that knowledge. But they're speaking to some representatives that are like, you know, go through your phone and see, call the people that can give you $10,000 first. And this candidate was panicking. They're like, I don't have those kind of friends, Lorenzo. I was like, well, I also did not have those kind of friends. And I still don't have those kind of friends. So you have to do it other ways. And that, you know, may be the difficult way of doing it, but I believe it's the right way. I believe it's the way that people are going to be able to buy into the system. And that's still a big disagreement between Democrats, especially where I live here in Collin County, that, you know, you see someone with a fat wallet come by and everyone's starting to, you know, praise them and their ideas, but they're outsiders, right? And the reason why they have that kind of money is because someone's putting them up to run in these types of races. We gotta fix our finance system. Politics, our politics in the future of our democracy is incumbent on us getting rid of these, you know, corporate PAC donations and these huge dollar donors that really flood the system and don't allow candidates that might be perfectly qualified and whose, you know, background makes them necessary to be part of the conversation in order for us to find lasting solutions are being excluded because of our political system right now. And we see that, yeah, it's just something that we definitely need to address and work on.
We have said time and again, the issue of our time is corporate special interest money controlling our government. Yeah. There is no question.
And I also have to sidebar that I hate call time more than anything in the whole world. And not only do I hate call time, but I've actually made like an edict for myself that I will not participate in call time. It's one thing to call particular people that you happen to know, whatever, that's fine. But cold calling, I won't do it anymore. It's just there's a better use to reach more people at one time. Done.
If my campaign manager's out on here right now, I hope she's listening to this part of the segment very, very carefully. My present for doing call time is she'll allow me to go and knock on doors afterwards. And that's my favorite thing in the world to do. So I actually will.
I do that too.
Door knocking is so much better.
Canvassing is, I'll canvass any day.
Especially if you got like a really great group going out and all that. And I think, And again,
you hit more people at once too.
Well, of course. And Lorenzo, the thing that's so unique about your race, which is something that I, as a candidate, would pride myself on, is it isn't about how big of a donation number you have. It's how many donors you have, and especially how many donors in your district that you have. That says a lot about who is looking to represent you and your district. And that is something that is really lost. And, you know, we really try to do that. We emphasize the importance of everything is local politically. So that is something that, speaking of donations, we would like each of you to let us know your website, how people can get involved. This is very important, guys. Yeah. You know, several hundred, possibly several thousand people when this is all said and done between all of our platforms is going to see this. So for anybody who would like to get involved in either of these, frankly, all of these.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, guys, these people are on the home stretch now. Mm-hmm. So this isn't something where like you need to sign up to be a monthly donor or whatever. This is their last hoorah.
And especially starting,
so put it out there.
Starting next week for about 2 weeks. That's when it's really all hands on deck. Early voting leading up to Election Day. Huge, huge deal. Donna, lead us off. Your website. How can people get involved?
Hey, I had a question for Lorenzo before I say that. Isn't it true that in Texas House races, there's no maximum? Anyone can donate?
It is exactly true.
Yeah, so basically, I'm ready to check.
Yeah.
So one person could just write a check.
Yes.
One billionaire write you $100,000. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Or Jerry Jones could watch this conversation and I could say something negative and he can go fund my competitors for, you know, $500 million as well.
And you better be a good Cowboy fan now.
I'm a great Cowboy fan, Jerry. I just want you to know.
I wanted to point that out to show you, you know, how crazy our, you know, Texas House seats are. And the reason I want to point this out is that before I go into my website, and I will in just 1 second, but I think this is really interesting to know that Democrats used to have a trifecta in Texas. They used to have the Texas State House, this Texas State Senate, and the governorship in the early 90s.
Ann Richards, the bomb. Yes.
And so the GOP has been very strategic. Not only did they take over these House districts one by one and flip them, very strategically, and then they gerrymandered them so that they would never flip back to blue. And every time population growth happens, they redistrict them again, reshuffle them to protect the GOP. So they're very, very strategic in the way that they have control over Texas. This did not happen by chance. It was strategically done over a period of several years. Tom DeLay was one of the big, you know, architects of this, and that's how this was done, by investing in Texas. So imagine if you can give an enormous amount of money, you can flip any you know, house district. But I'm going to leave you with this. Now they are coming after our school board, elections. They're coming after city council elections, which are supposed to be nonpartisan. Yes. They are making them extremely partisan. And they are pumping money because they know that local control leads to more control, to more control, to federal control, and on and on. So with that in mind, I want to let you guys know my website is votefordonna.com. This is a blue-green district. Anyone who wins this March 1st will win this election. So if you can donate, that would be wonderful. I would really appreciate it. But here's something better you can do. If you know anybody in Austin, Texas, call them, text them, let them know that they've probably been redistricted into a brand new District 37, that Donna Imam is running in that district, and to check out our, you know, campaign and vote for us if they're in district. That is the best thing that you can do, because votes win elections.
Yeah. So guys, also, and I always repeat this, go on and at least get on all their social media, and promote the social media, because that helps. You never know who sees what you put out there. I forget where we were in this process.
Jasmine, you're up next.
There we go.
Yes. First of all, thank you guys so much. And we were outspent 5-1. So, you know, what I do want people to know is that you can do it. I am living proof of that. Right now, we're definitely being outraised. I'm guessing we're being outspent as well by one of my opponents. He is not the Antichrist, though. So I actually love him a lot. But he's raising aggressively, and that's what we have to do. And unlike Lorenzo, I have caps. So I have to raise bigger money and have to do it in smaller chunks. And so we have a cap of $2,900 that we can get from individuals. We cannot accept from law firms and PLLCs and things like that, which on the state level. It's a little different how we can accept our money. So it's been really, really tough. But I can be found at Jasmine for Us. That's JASMINEFORUS.com, as well as all social media platforms. My interns just did this great TikTok that went pretty viral, I guess. I think it's got like 700,000 views.
Wow.
And so it's a great TikTok that just kind of educates people on the madness in Texas right now, with our Secretary of State saying that he doesn't have enough paper so that we can register to vote, right? And of course, Texas refuses to allow us to register online. So like it's a very cute parody, and it would be maybe cuter if it wasn't true, but like it's informative. So anyway, if you guys get a chance, or even on TikTok, of course, Twitter and everything else. But thanks so much for having us. I love you guys so much.
You're the bomb. And wait, you remember you have to say hi to my friend Ina for me. Do you know Ina?
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Ina is the love of my life. Ina Menjarez.
Does she know that you know me?
I don't think so.
You should tell her. We went to law school together. She graduated from my same class at St. Mary's.
Well, do you know that she's running for county judge?
No, I didn't know. Last I heard, she was still rep.
No, we're still all reps, but no, she's leaving the house and she's running for county judge. And she just earned the endorsement of the San Antonio Express. I don't remember what they call the paper, but she just earned their endorsement. So I'm super proud of Ina.
That's awesome.
We've got all these amazing quorum breakers that are trying to maneuver and do things in another creative way.
Yeah. You know what? A lot of alums from my school are sitting on benches out there in Texas, people. Yeah. I just want to tell you, I know quite a few around the district. So if you guys get in trouble, give me a call.
Lorenzo, last but not least, fire away, brother. You're on mute.
You're muted.
Reach out at lorenzofortexas.com and spell out the 4 F-O-R. It's spelled out, lorenzofortexas.com. You can volunteer. And exactly right. Go on our social media, like all of our posts, send it to your friends to follow us. Donate $5 if that's what you have to donate. That is not an amount too small. Trust me, that's how I know Jasmine for sure. That's how we ran our campaigns. That's how we get it done, with a lot of individuals helping push us forward. So if you also have those rich progressive friends who have a few thousand dollars laying around, we'll also take that, right? But if that's not what you have, give what you can. Help lift our messages up. We need some sanity back in our state houses and in Congress. We need change, leaders that want to go and bring about real change. Let's hopefully get elected and start that change. And I know that here in Collin County, once I get elected, people will start to expect that kind of leadership from their representation. So it won't be long before some of these GOP Congress members either clean up their act very quickly or, you know, get challenged at the ballot box. So
fantastic. You've all been fantastic. And one final thing I would like to say, and I am the most politically incorrect person because I don't play any BS. I want you all to take a very good look at this panel. This is what Texas looks like
today. It is. It really is. You guys are very indicative. It's like we almost look like we, in a very identity politicky way, kind of planned it.
And I don't play, and again, like I said, I don't play that crap, but you know what? This is Texas. This is Texas today, and this is Texas tomorrow, and you better get your asses straight, because I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a progressive wave that's going to sweep that state, and it's going to be very hard, because once you break through, it's the GOP. If the GOP is ever going to evolve, it's going to happen when you break Texas. That's when it'll happen. And so you're not that far away. Keep trucking along. Donna Imam, Jasmine Crockett, Lorenzo Sanchez. It has been a real pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
For our first candidate panel of 2022, yes. There will be more. We love you guys. Best of luck, and we'll be in touch.
Bye, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
You're very welcome.
Don't mess with Texas.
Don't mess with Texas.
Don't mess with Texas. Do not mess with Texas.
Well, it is a great state.
I have a lot of love for Texas. I really do.
So. I haven't been to Austin yet, but I would really like to get there.
Austin, here's the thing about Austin. It's not necessarily the most fun place to visit in a touristy way. Like, yeah, there's a state capital and stuff, but it's an amazing place to live. Like, there's so much to do. There's such good food, but it's not like there's a particular touristy.
But you know what? There's live music. There's great food. Austin is known for the food. I know that. It's known for the nightlife.
It's known for unaffordable housing.
It's known for that. And of course, it also has one of the best state institutions in the United States with the University of Texas. So
blah, 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 St. Mary's.
But I really like Dallas-Fort Worth. And even though that's the much more conservative part of the state, I really enjoyed it. I didn't like Houston.
I also think it has to do with where you stay, who you know, what you do while you're in any given place, what your experience is. What you're talking about isn't like a geography thing.
No.
There's nothing they're both flat. So it's not like there's any, real topography in either of those places. San Antonio is the best.
Now, the one thing we didn't get to tackle with them, but I do think is an issue here that obviously, Arlene.
Texas does. Rudy's Barbecue. Rudy's Barbecue is in between San Antonio.
Little big.
And it's like, it's west on I-10, past the Dominion, almost towards Comfort or New, I can't remember the name of the little town. It's been a while, but Rudy's Barbecue.
Well, like I said, I wish I remember the name of the place. And you know what? If I looked it up right now, I would probably find it. But I'm telling you, and I don't eat chicken anymore, but my God.
But
this was the best. It was a pesto chicken white pie pizza at this barbecue.
Which makes me realize that the next time if you're in North Carolina, the next time that you're there, there's this place near Hendersonville called Flat Rock Bakery that has the best chicken pesto pizza.
And if I ever make the exception,
you don't.
That's when I would.
Oh, to have the chicken.
That's when I would. If I was going to do it, that's what I would do it for. Because it was that freaking good. I was so blown away by it.
It's not even that fancy of a thing.
But I couldn't get over it. I was like, oh my God, this is so good.
What do we have coming up?
And from somebody from Jersey who appreciates the Italian style pizza, it really was something else. And Ricardo coming in hot with I want to go to Texas to listen to some Texas blues. I really like Nashville, but that's another good reason to go to Austin because it is known as a great live music scene.
Yeah, it is. There's always live music. Well, so with Asheville's like that too.
Well, yeah.
Like I will find live music basically for every meal of the day and just go sit somewhere and have live music. Like I'll plan my day around where there's live music in Asheville.
Great point. All right, so on the docket, what do we have?
Well, you're going to have to talk to me about Mariah Parker because I see that she is a council person.
Yes, she is council person.
But I can't see that she's running for anything. So is she a candidate or are we talking to her?
Okay. We're talking to her because she made a viral hip-hop video recently about lifting up the working class, which I thought was really, really cool.
That's cool.
Really, really cool.
Yeah, I saw that she's also a hip-hop artist. So she's a hip-hop artist and on a city commission.
Couldn't have said it better, Calabrese.
It's Athens, Georgia. Yeah.
And one of the reasons why it is so expensive to live in Austin, which again, we didn't get a chance to really tackle, Torchy's Tacos, Mallory.
Yeah, the Keep Austin Weird thing is more like Keep Austin Rich. It's definitely changed.
No, 100%. And again, the one thing we talk about, and let's be honest, guys, who are a lot of the people that are moving to Austin? It's a lot of people from California. Let's just keep it honest.
Yeah, they want to go where there's no state income tax.
That's true.
But
unfortunately, in Texas, Texas also has the third highest property taxes in the country. Right. And that's where they get you. Florida's bad, but it's not as bad as Texas when it comes to that. And the other problem, of course, is Texas is not just Texas overall, but specifically Austin. It is a total breeding ground for centralized planning. And that is a big problem. When you have too many people concentrated in one area, the cost of living is going to spike because the people who have the most money and power are always going to be the ones who benefit the most. And the working class are always going to suffer for it, which like Calabrese said, it's the artists and the musicians can't afford to live there anymore.
And then it comes down to for me is people, we're just not meant to live on top of each other.
We are not.
We're meant to live like with our feet on the ground.
That's what I'm talking about. And then, of course, we are also going to be speaking with Sam Sachs. Tom Hartman, if you're out there and you're hearing our podcast right now, we know how much you love that guy. Sam Sachs is a great commentator.
Well, we need to get Tom on for his new book.
He will be coming on. Okay. He'll be coming on in March, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
And Sam, he was really great on Tom Hartman's show on RT. He is with Means TV now, also where our good friend Mike Figueredo of the Humanist Report is as well, where his show gets broadcast. So we're really looking forward to that conversation. And then next week, I believe on Monday, we are going to be speaking with candidate for New York's 3rd Congressional District, Melanie DiRigo.
That's Valentine's Day, by the way.
And we're going to be speaking with her friend and head of the Long Island activist, Robert Buonaspina.
Did you already get that set up?
Didn't put it on the calendar yet, getting it set up, but yes. Yes, that is what
it was. We come up with ideas for shows sort of as a joint effort. Like you called me up to tell me what was going on with Melanie. I'm like, okay, we got to get her on the show as ASAP.
Yeah, because it's all BS what's going on.
Right. And then I said, oh, we should also get Robert in on this call.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're really a collective effort.
Ricardo, you know what? I'm not generally in favor of socialized policies, but national rent control is something we've got to be pushing for because it's so far out of hand now. And you know, it's kind of like, if we had a true functioning capitalist system, like a hybrid system that they have in places like Germany, Japan, and the UK, and obviously in Scandinavia, you know, the one thing you have to remember is that when it comes to taxation, when you have a bear market, you lower taxes. When you have a bull market, you raise taxes. And all we ever seem to do in this country is lower taxes and benefit the rich. I mean, honestly, didn't President Biden campaign on rolling back Trump's tax cuts?
Well, he also campaigned on canceling the student debt. Some student debt. And there was something else that he campaigned on the minimum wage and then didn't, the $15 minimum wage.
Come on, man, I don't want to do those things.
Okay, so guys, while I have you guys on here, I want to do a hypothetical question. So today I was applying for a job. Yeah, I'm looking for part-time gig work. Like I'm just trying to have like a bunch of little things going on. But anyway, this job, one of the questions was, what person that is a known person does my on-air persona remind you of? So when I'm here sitting here doing the shtick or whatever we're doing, what person does it remind you of that's a known person? It doesn't have to be a media person. And I'm serious. Like I already answered the question, but just for like shits and giggles, let's just see if anybody has any. Cause I called my parents. I put out a text to him. I could not figure out what to say. I even did a girl group text to all my girls. I'm like, and that's where I came. If I see any of you throw something out, I'll tell you what we ultimately went with. But I wasn't so thrilled with it. I mean, like in my mind, I'm like some sort of combination of like Murphy Brown and a wannabe Gilda Radner. Like if I had to like that would sort of be like what I would, but Candace Murphy's Spurgeon, not real. Huh? And I have the people that are reading my job application are probably not old enough to remember Murphy or Gilda anyway. So it doesn't really matter. That's part of the problem when you're my age and you to have social references with people that are now in hiring positions is they don't know. It's like talking about a jukebox or something.
Your teeth and smile. Oh, interesting. So Michael Fassbender.
But that's more just physical appearance. I think they were more talking, Mallory.
Edie Falco from Arlene.
Okay. Well, okay. That's good. But as long as you guys are using it in reference of not just physical appearance, but more like on-air persona.
Yeah, I can see that.
But, okay. Well, I mean, I'm just saying that's some good ones. I know it's weird. I don't normally like to, you know, we don't normally talk about me. What's that look?
Oh, no, we're talking about you now.
We always talk about you or your sports games.
Well,
you want to have a little Super Bowl briefing?
No, that'll be Wednesday. We'll brief the Super Bowl on Wednesday. But we're all about the underdog. So right now it does look like Cincinnati. Sorry, Farbod. Love you, brother. And maybe we'll see each other for the Super Bowl.
I'm doing the Icky Shuffle.
The Icky Shuffle?
It's the Icky Shuffle with Cincinnati.
Yes.
Icky Shuffle.
If they can ultimately win the Super Bowl this time, we'll see. Been there three times before, never won. The Rams have won it once, but that was when they were in St. Louis, which is where they should still be, mind you.
I'm rooting for the Bengals. I always like their helmets. Mallory, that's what everyone else said. We all had to marinate on it for a while. So before we go, I'm going to tell you what we ended up coming up with, because it isn't easy. So I ended up putting, based on all my friends' input, that it was a combination of Bill Maher and John Oliver. So we'll see.
God, John Oliver.
Well, obviously not with the accent, but in terms of the types of questions and the sarcasm.
But have you ever seen him talk about all the problems that are in America? They don't have these problems in the UK. Well, I think
it's the way he jokes and is sarcastic and like laughs about the most horrific, ridiculous nonsense. I think that's it. And then the Bill Maher thing is probably just being really snarky and smoking weed.
And one last thing before we go. You guys out there who have your panties in a bunch about Joe Rogan, get over it already.
Please stop.
It is so insufferable.
It really is.
If you don't like him, then don't watch him. Joe Rogan hurt my feelings. Joe Rogan's a racist. It's like,
well, but I'm a racist, so
you're a racist,
Karen.
I would
think Joe and I would get along swimmingly.
You're a racist, Karen. A little bit of Pocahontas. It's the hair. So there you go. You are culturally appropriating Pocahontas' hair.
Now you're really deep. Now the Native Americans won't come on. The First Peoples won't come talk to me. I do want to get together. We were talking about doing something. We want to get Sam from Reset Race on at the same time as either Mark Charles or Chase Ironizer, one of the more, active Native activists. And because that was something that we thought I think would be really cool. Because their issues are completely different, but yet very, very valid.
Fair enough. Well, Chris Leal said he would like to come on the podcast, and his race is coming up, and do want to give him the benefit of the doubt. As Jasmine said, she was paying attention to his debate tonight. So yeah, he said he would be available. Maybe we can have him come on next Monday or Wednesday.
Yeah,
so
we'll that'd be fine. Yeah, we've had Chase Ironize before. The only problem with that interview is he was doing it from like the side of a hike in somewhere near Niagara Falls. And the reception was bad, and he kept getting what do you call it?
Yes, dropping. That's true. Yeah, and Chase is great, so we'll get him back.
Yeah, so that all would right. be a good talk. But we, one of the things, Mallory, I don't know if you saw the episode with Sam from Reset Race, but there's consistently with the reparations movement this where people tell them that they like sort of lump them in with Native Americans as if, well, you all should get reparations. And it's just really a matter of having separate issues and separate needs and separate means of reparations, because the Natives don't really want reparations. They want their treaties to be honored and they want their land back. So it's different and it's different because it's sovereign nation versus individuals. It's a very different thing.
Well, it's like a lot of conservative.
Thank you, Arlene. You know what? That's a good one. And I really wish I had thought of that. Yes, that is the bet. Thank you. Now, that is truly a compliment, because my best friend said Bill Maher, and I was kind of like, and not politically.
You people, you're so terrible.
No, but John Stewart, that's like a real compliment.
There's this guy, I forgot.
Declan, you're being really, really rude tonight. And I don't want to block you, but you're being rude.
Well, it doesn't matter now because the show's over.
I know, but I don't like it. I had to put him in timeout like a baby.
Ricardo, I understand that, but unfortunately Rogan is a hot commodity and the others are not.
11
that's
million.
It's
the way it works.
That's real free market capitalism.
I don't see this as censorship in any way, shape,
or
form.
And the one thing that, and again, if people want to take their business away, I have no problem with that. You know what I do have a problem with, Ricardo? I have a problem with people like Jim Acosta. Jim Acosta and Brian Stelter going on national television and telling people to censor Joe Rogan. That I have a problem with, and so should you and everybody else. That's a big problem. And that is 1984. That is Big Brother, because that's what their voices are attempting to do, is block people from speaking. And so
it doesn't work, really.
No,
it ultimately doesn't work.
No. And Rogan is going to come out looking like a bright, shiny object. And the one thing that I have to say, and this is the whole thing, this comes full circle with everything that came out today about Don Winslow and the fact that he has been the guy, this successful author, big wig, liberal elitist, who has been trying to lead the charge to get Rogan thrown off of Spotify for using the N-word. Well, guess what? Mr. Winslow has been using the N-word quite a bit for quite a long time. The hypocrisy within these circles is big. big, big, big. And so censorship never works. In fact, it always has the opposite intended effect. Joe Rogan has been cruising along as pretty politically independent, but even said he supported Bernie Sanders. Yeah, Bernie Sanders in the 2020 election. You keep this shit up and you're going to drive him right into the hands of the Jordan Peterson right, because that's what's going to happen. And he can use his platform to screw the progressives even harder.
They just do not understand.
They don't get it. Because, and you know,
11 million.
And you know who got, and let me tell you this, guys, Spotify's been pulling shows off of their channel. You know who they pulled off? They pulled off Joe Rogan's conversations with Kyle Kulinski. Do you now understand what censorship does? Because that's where it's going. It never works the way you think it's going to work. It will always work against working people, always. And especially those that espouse the things that we're fighting for. Could you believe that some numbnuts decided to put out a graphic today suggesting that Russell Brand is a conservative, that he's a right winger?
Well, but based on what facts? Russell Brand is left of the spectrum, like of the spectrum of left, right. Russell Brand is like outside of the spectrum. He truly just is not within that.
And listen, there were more names. There were more names that were on this guy's supposed list about who's on the right. And all I'm thinking is, you are just trying to portray anybody who doesn't fit your description of what the left is and paint them on that side. And why?
Say that about Russell Brand. Yeah. If you're not paying attention to him, he is one of the best allies in what we're trying to do.
He is all about universal
justice, social justice, environmental justice. And he's so non-judgmental. And let me tell you this, seriously, he is brilliant.
He is
a brilliant person. And when he he says things in a comedic fashion sometimes. And I think that plus how he does his accent and then some of the roles he's had, I think sort of portray him as like a ding dong or something. Like, I don't know. Like he always plays like a drugged out, whatever.
But
like
he's much more intelligent than people would ever know.
He's brilliant. And on the final
note of the evening, Arlene is correct. The elites in the mainstream are trying to take him down because they want to control it all. And that's what it is. They do not want anyone off the reservation thinking for themselves. And that is the danger of the corporatocracy that we are fighting back against. So in conclusion, if you want to solve these major problems that we're fighting against, yes, it's dead. We are never going to get where we want to go until we recognize that political puritanism is an utter failure of the highest order. You see it with Andrew Yang. You're seeing it with Joe Rogan. You're not going to agree with everybody. It's never going to happen. And if you do find a way to agree with everybody, it's in a very, very small bubble that you're going to find that in. In the real world, we have to figure out a way to get along with as many people as we can, because that's the only way that we can beat the 1%.
You know, Nina says it best when she talks about the John Deere and the labor unions and the strikes and all that, because those workers their party affiliation is irrelevant.
Yet
they don't care. There's all of them. There's Trump supporters, Bernie supporters, there's all different people that are on that picket line. And yet it doesn't matter. And they're still able to get things done. And I do think this is a bigger problem on the left. The sort of like puritanism and all of that stuff. It makes it very difficult. Let me just once again say, we're trying to put together a South Florida Council of Progressive Caucuses. I hate the word caucuses. I feel like it should be cauci.
The South Florida Progressive Council is what we're trying to do.
Yes.
And so we will.
Thanks, Osiris. That's
Osiris
awesome.
Coming in hot. Russell Brand is that dude.
He is. And the truth is, what I love about him, this is the hippy dippy part of me, right? He's all about the collective and about love. He is. And that's like, you know, he's coming from a place of that. And so, you know, when people criticize him, it's really frustrating because he is such a net positive. His message is always positive.
Always.
He's always.
He just calls out the BS and he knows.
Yes, in a funny way. But like, he's always kind and he's always like compassionate. And he's, if you ever see this, oh my God, you and I would have such a good conversation.
Maybe one day we'll make it happen. But I will say this. if your knee-jerk reaction to getting called out for the crap that you defend on the left and saying, oh, the right is, but what about those guys? And they do. If you can't clean out your own house, you don't deserve to clean out other people's houses. And that's the way it is. We appreciate you guys.
So we will see you on Wednesday with Mariah. Mm-hmm. Not Mariah Carey. That would be a good get. Just saying.
It's all good.
I know. And also with Sam Sachs. So Peter didn't finish his... What?
Ricardo, if you haven't seen my earlier Pontificating with Pete event this evening, go check it out. And we appreciate you guys. I got my thoughts out there.
Thank you,
Seventh.
Guys, share it. You know, it's an easy sell. It's free to subscribe. We don't even really sell Patreon, but we should.
You know, it's a good thing that I really did. It's a good thing, Mr. Pro Scout, that you keep on harassing us, because what that ultimately ends up doing is making me remember that we have to do one more thing that, of course, is going to piss you off to no end, which is ask for financial support for the channel.
Yeah, Patreon.com. And just so you guys know, seriously, and I did want to shout out thanks to all of the people that are our Patreons, because of that and because of this show, we were able to sponsor Nina's event.
Yeah.
And that's really
sponsored.
We did. I wasn't necessarily planning on it. They were gonna put up, you know, the money and, you know, as part of their budget. But then I just, we're just gonna cover the bill. And we just did. But meanwhile, we need to get to care about the in-kind donation form, because we did say paid for by Nina Turner. And so it has to now have the form that we did it. Anyway.
Well, one day, when that time may never come, or it might call upon Nina to do a service for us, but that aside, we took good care of her. She's really good. Really good lady.
I love Nina.
We'll see you on Wednesday.
Why is this guy so mean, though? Like, why is he such a dickhead?
No, he's gonna get a call from my friends.
You need to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Well, I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
That's what we're talking about.
If he comes back to our show again.
Why are you so mean?
Let me have a real
problem. I'm a decent person, I promise. Why are you so mean?
Good night.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.